You're listening to the OverDivorce.com podcast with host Tom and Adrian, two guys swapping stories about getting over divorce. If you're going through a painful divorce and are struggling with anger and anxiety, then you've found the right podcast. Hang with us for the next 30 minutes or so, and we promise you'll gain useful insight and effective tips and techniques for getting over your divorce and rebuilding a better life.
Today on the show, we have attorney and former municipal judge Camille Milner. Camille has a private law practice that she started in 84, where she specializes in family law, estate planning, and probate and guardianship. Camille is the president of the Collaborative Law Institute of Texas and the past president of the Denton County Collaborative Professionals. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. And just to clarify, I'm the president-elect of the Collaborative Law Institute this year. We have a current president.
You have a current. So the president, is that in case of assassination? Or
that sounds like a coup.
I certainly hope not. He's a dear friend.
Friends make the best coup targets.
Friends and relatives, right?
I'll warn him about that.
Yeah, today's show, we wanted to kind of get into collaborative law and, you know, want to find out a little bit, like, what is that and how does it apply to divorce? What is collaborative law?
Would it be all right if I start with a little background?
Absolutely. A lot of background.
Well, if you talk to folks that are involved in the collaborative practice movement, you'll hear surprisingly similar stories. Most of us, we got out of law school at a time that even mediation was not regularly practiced or even practiced at all. And we all were trained to be lawyers, which we did for a number of years, but began to understand how ineffective that was for restructuring families. So a man up in Minnesota named Stu Webb was having those same experiences. And in about 1980, he was on the verge of completely quitting practicing law. He was tired of what he felt like was devastation of families, and he was getting ready just to completely quit practicing. And he had some friends on the Supreme Court of Minnesota, and he contacted one of them and wrote him a letter and said, "I know you're probably going to think I'm touched in the head with this idea, but I just wanted to run it by you." And the Supreme Court justice responded to him that not only was he not touched in the head, but he was a visionary and he needed to follow this idea because it was going to change the world. That was 25 years ago. And we luckily didn't have Stu abandon the practice of law, and he began developing his vision. And there are thousands of attorneys, financial professionals, and mental health professionals around this country, and over 5,000 trained worldwide that now practice in collaborative law. So that's just a little bit of background. So most of the people that are involved in it had this similar experience of finding that the court system did not effectively help families restructure and that we all needed to find another way to do that.
What's the big problem with the way that it's traditionally done in terms of the damage done to families?
Well, to begin with, it's a positional-based negotiation. And I think maybe one or both of you have been through the process of divorce. I don't know anything about how your process was. But in my day, unless a case just settled because the couple were able to work everything out, it went to court. And when it did, in positional bargaining or negotiation, one side wins and one side loses, and the only way to play that game is for people to get up on the witness stand and try to convince the judge who's going to make the decisions that one is better than the other, that they are better than the other parent, or that they are more entitled to more of the property than the other spouse. And the only way to do that is to throw as much figuratively speaking, mud as you can against the other side, because that was the only way to make yourself look better. And you can imagine, particularly with children, those things that people say on the stand can never be taken back. And the damage that it did to the foundation of these people's ability to be friends or members of a family, and the effect that it was going to have on their relationship with regard to the children, was what more than anything else was devastating these families, and particularly the children, after this type of divorce.
That doesn't really happen anymore, though, right? What we've heard over and over is that most divorce cases don't go to trial anymore. That's really rare, right?
Not so much. And I say that by the fact that statistically, most cases settle prior to doing the bloodletting of a full-fledged trial. The question, though, is what do those settlements look like? Because if you have spent most of the money you've spent on your attorneys doing written discovery, doing depositions, and preparing for a trial, and that's where you have put most of your resources, and then at trial or even after trial starts is when the case settles, the damage is already done. Even if it settles shortly before the trial or earlier in the process, if all these resources have been spent toward a trial that will never take place, there are a large proportion of the resources that could have been spent developing a much more high-quality settlement that will be durable and beneficial to the family. And the way you do that is in the collaborative process is one way to do that is you make an agreement not to go to court. You sign a contract not to go to court, and you agree to use all your resources for as long as possible to develop a quality settlement that will be beneficial to all.
So it differs from mediation in that at the end of mediation, you agree to not to go to court versus in a collaborative environment, you're agreeing prior to mediation that you're not going to go to court.
That's right. It's prior to mediation and or prior to trial. And one of the other things to think about when you settle these at the courthouse door, which is how we sometimes term it, is you are doing that under the gun, so to speak, of walking into the courtroom. And obviously the decisions that are made are not going to be the cool-headed, long-term, effective decisions that would be made if your focus and concentration is on developing a quality settlement. Now, you can go through mediation and do something similar, but one of the differences is in mediation, very often it is position based, and so one side will propose I want this, the other side will say I won't agree to that, and so they will end up compromising rather than an organic development of a settlement that they reach together slowly, at least by some people's measurement, because it's over a period of weeks rather than in one day like most mediations in Texas are handled. And so they will address the different issues and problems that need to be addressed over a period of several meetings and then take some time to think about the decisions that they've made. So when they put the settlement to pen and present it to the judge, all the options have been looked at, or many, many options have been looked at, and then they've been able to follow, well, if we go with this option, what would be the consequences of that option? And if we go with this option, option number two, say, what would be the consequences of that option? So they're able to think into the future, and sometimes they change their mind on what the options are that they're going to agree to because they've had time to think, ponder, deliberately consider what would be best for their family.
Can you talk a little bit about the structure and how that happens? Because I think that would shed some light, because it's a different way of going about, well, collaborating, for lack of a better term, than, say, mediation and regular litigation.
Sure.
Because I think that was helpful for me to kind of wrap my arms around, okay, the whole methodology is different, where everybody's getting together and kind of trying to work it all out. So if you could chat a little bit about that, the actual process, I think that might shed some light.
Of course, I'll be glad to. And very often people do mistake collaborative process with mediation because the idea is settlement. But it is very different. In traditional litigation, of course, you're at different tables and you are against each other. In mediation, in most places, you are, if you're not in the same room, then you are more positional. If you're in the same room, which I'm going to speak mainly about Texas. In Texas, ours is what we call a caucus format. And that is the parties are in separate rooms and they are not working towards a solution together. They're really carrying their individual positions and a lawyer will typically, a mediator is also a family lawyer or a lawyer of some sort. And that lawyer or mediator will go back and forth between the rooms taking these different proposals, and they never really develop one organically, as I've said a few minutes ago, together. Each party in litigation and in a traditional mediation has a lawyer, and then there's the mediator. So typically you'll have five people engaged in it. In the collaborative process, in the Texas model or the neutral model, which it's sometimes called, then each client does have their own lawyer, but the entire setup of the room is different. For example, you also will have in Texas, in addition to the two lawyers, our neutral method has other members of the team, and they are both neutrals. And the neutrality of these other professionals are really the key to the success of the collaborative process. Typically, we will have a financial professional on one end of the table. We will have a communications coach or facilitator who is a trained mental health professional on the other end of the table. And then the two lawyers will sit on one side, while the two clients will sit on the other side. And the metaphor for this is that the clients, instead of fighting each other, are working on a problem together. And that is an incredibly powerful metaphor that changes the dynamics of the room. There are books written about this type of interest-based negotiation, and one in particular written by some folks at the Harvard Negotiation Project is called Getting to Yes. I've actually used this book to teach negotiation in both family lawyers and or lawyers and counselors, mental health professionals. And it's written by Roger Fisher and William Urey, who were people at the Harvard Negotiation Project in Boston. And one of the most important things they talk about in Getting to Yes is not only, instead of doing proposals, you do interest-based option development, but they also say what you want to do is separate the people from the problems. And so you're not fighting the other person as much as you are both problem solving this issue or problem that's in front of you.
Sitting there next to that person and not being able to see them, I guess, as much, if you're sitting across from the attorneys and you're seeing the attorneys more than you're seeing.
Right, that's exactly right, and that's one of the purposes of it, so that people aren't staring at each other in an ugly fashion. It takes some of that out of the room. The dynamics begin with each lawyer will work with their own client, and you know the Abraham Lincoln saying about our better angels. This promotes that, because believe it or not, people are hungry for a conflict resolution process that is not warring. I am forever amazed that what people have seen on television is really not what they want, but bless their hearts, they don't know there's any other option. So their friends and family members get on the side with them and start gearing them up. In collaborative and just in family law in general, most people that come for a divorce really do not start out that way. And they want to look at their better angels and think about what's in the best interest of the children. Far and away, the majority of people come to me and they say that. And they just don't know that this process or anything like it is out there. So what the lawyers do from the very beginning, individually with their client, is ask them in their benevolent selves, what would be their goals? What would be their goals for the children? And almost always they say there is a huge value to these children still having a good relationship with both parents. And we can usually get both parents to say that the other parent has value and the relationship has value. Then we ask them, what is their long-term goal on the finances? And no one ever says, I want the other side to be in bankruptcy. They almost always say, we both need to leave this marriage without having our finances completely in the tank, and we both need to be able to follow what our next life is going to be with a reasonable amount of financial security and stability. Then we talk about what their long-term relationship goals might be, and this one really will shock you. Most people say that they want a long-term relationship with the other party on some level. Now, very often, right after the divorce, that can be awkward and tough, but that's their long-term goal, and we help them get there. One of the things that we do, and people are asking more and more for this, is we will have them write a letter together to their friends and extended family and say, this is something that we are going through together, but we do not want you to take sides. We don't want you to fuel the fire because we want to have a continuing long-term relationship with you, and we want our children to. You'd be surprised how many people really want to do that because they know the negativity that will come from having their other relationships upset. They know the negativity that will come to their children if at their child's high school graduation their butterflies are more because of how the parents are going to interact than the actual excitement of the day. And so when we ask those questions, and the Texas Collaborative Law Institute uses some of the theory from the Harvard Negotiation Project, and we have something called the Negotiation Workbook that we have the clients complete, and then we work with them. And sure, when they start out answering some of those questions, there may be some negativity and barbing to the lawyer from the individual client, but we work with them in their overall goal to try and get to the other side of this without spending the family fortune and protecting what is in the family coffers for their children's college. Who wouldn't want that? It's just most people don't know that it's available.
That letter is beautiful. That's like, what a great way. If you can get, you know, people to kind of do that, it really changes the paradigm.
It does.
And the lens of how they're looking at it. And to your point, yeah, friends and family can really fuel that fire and the taking sides. And I think part of the challenge is, too, is when you're going through a divorce, you kind of want that. You want your family to be behind you.
Sure.
But I think reframing it in that and putting that letter that you can send to everybody is a really smart way of handling it. But it's I'm sure it's a challenge for some. For sure.
I'm wondering about something you said earlier, which was, you know, you have this very large team of neutrals and attorneys, and you also said it took a much longer amount of time than a typical negotiation that you'd have in mediation.
Can I clarify that? I think I meant
that. Okay.
What I meant was it doesn't finish in a day like a mediation is envisioned as finishing. So let me go back and talk about that a little more. Truth be told, the collaborative cases take a lot less time than most other types of conflict resolution and family law cases. And I just misspoke because I was really talking about a day-long mediation. What we do in the collaborative process is we immediately begin working with our clients and having the joint meetings. And so It is extraordinarily rare that a case will finish by the 61st day that Texas law allows a case to be finished on the 61st day after it is filed. If you have a family where they sit in at the kitchen table and they don't have property or they don't have very much complex property and they don't have children, then they can sit down at the kitchen table and possibly work it out and then just have lawyers draft it up and finish it by the 61st or 70th day. Litigation will last months or years and cost thousands and thousands of dollars. I have had collaborative cases that have finished around the 61st or second day, because what we will do is get the parties in, go ahead and file, and very often we do something that's an animal that was unknown in Texas until this, which is filing a joint petition, which states to the world, it is our decision to end this relationship. And then we begin having the meetings. And if I can tell you a little bit more about the neutrals, the communications coach or facilitator will meet with the parties together and meet with them individually to train them on the communications techniques to prevent this from escalating into ugly words or bad feelings. And the clients are very open to doing that. But if they have some of those negative feelings towards each other, or they have said something in a way that can be taken wrong, the communications coach can either stop them in the meeting very diplomatically and help them reframe that, or actually retrain them in their thinking before we actually are in the joint meetings. And the joint meetings are where the two lawyers, the two clients, and the two neutrals are.
How much duct tape is actually used? By the yard or the foot? How do you measure that?
Well, the duct tape is really their personal counselor. Right. And that's what we want each of these parties to do if we possibly can is help them work through the emotions of this completely offline with their own counselor and go back and analyze, looking back, what could have been different or what happened, because this process really has an attempt, in contrast to the counseling model, to looking forward. And so that's what the facilitator or communications coach helps us do. They also have been known from time to time to correct a lawyer's way of saying things too, which is very helpful to us. Then the financial neutral is just an incredible help, because they sit down with each of the clients individually and they build what the client's assets and liabilities are, and we call this an inventory and appraisement. These are required in every case in Texas now, whether it's litigation, mediation, or collaborative. And they put it on a spreadsheet, and they accumulate all the information so that then the clients actually have full disclosure and informed consent about what they are dividing, what they own, what they owe, and what they will be dividing. And this is a very powerful tool. One of the things the financial person or the financial professional pulls together is they have each party pull their credit reports, and very often they will find credit cards that are old that need to be dealt with, or balances on credit cards that the clients don't even know about. And that enables the clients, again, to have a full picture before they go off doing things such as taking money, hiding money. They know what everything is, and so they are really on an even playing field because they have this information. The other thing that I find to be incredibly valuable that the financial professional does is he helps these clients budget. They look at what their current budget has been for the years or the year at the time that they decide to separate and divorce, and then they take the client's future budgets. And very often this is something the clients have not ever done, and they certainly haven't done it with the light of the future that they're wanting to put upon it. And that enables the clients to know how their property should be divided so that they can maximize their assets and most likely be able to meet each of their financial goals. Now, for example, if you've got somebody that the wife has stayed at home, and so she doesn't have retirement, but she's still got 25 years to, say, go back to teaching school and build a retirement, then cash may be a premium of importance to her at this point, or staying in the family residence, whereas the other spouse may have a premium on keeping the retirement intact. By looking at all these assets and the budgets, we are given the tools to know how best to set these people up for their future financial stability and meet their goals in a way that in litigation and even in mediation, these are not looked at. So you just don't have the budgets to enable people to have that focus on the future.
Are you changing disclosure, or where are you making the savings?
That's one place, yes, because typically, I don't even know how much depositions cost per page now, but it's several dollars per page, plus the lawyer's time to prepare for them and do the depositions, plus the written questions and written discovery. So what the parties are doing by this process is enabling a third party, neutral, who has no skin in the game, so to speak, to gather all the assets, and the clients deliver the assets to this third party, neutral, who puts them together. That saves thousands and thousands of dollars. And personally, I think the inventory and appraisement that the financial neutral has put together has a much greater value than any sort of depositions or written interrogatories or requests for production, because it's somebody that has not got a dog in this fight, so both the parties trust them more. They look at the information without devaluing it because the other side put it together. And both of them, both parties, both in the participation agreement and in the decree, agree that they have put this together, that they will, or that they have put this inventory together. And they sign a sworn statement that everything on the inventory and appraisement, they are swearing to the best of their knowledge, is correct. And they put that in the divorce decree too. And they say in this statement and in the divorce decree that if it is found that they have intentionally withheld any asset, then that asset, when or if it's discovered, will go 100% to the other side. Or if a liability is discovered that they were responsible for incurring, that they will be exclusively responsible for it. Now, I've had a couple of people through the years, because I've been doing this 16 years, that might have thought about failing to disclose something, and I will look in their eyes and see a look that that prospect of losing all of that asset or getting all of that liability if they fail to disclose it is a very chilling thing, and then they don't do it.
That's big motivator.
Not only is it the savings, but it's also got more, in my opinion, it's got more integrity than regular traditional discovery.
Now, you also have another person involved who's a mental health professional. And are they there to administer electric shock therapy? I mean, what's the role there?
That would be a really good option for them. But,
just a low dose.
But yeah, actually they serve two roles. One is, as we've already talked about, they help everybody in the room reframe and use better communication techniques to keep the process moving and get us to the end zone and to the finals. The other very big piece of what they do is each of the people that are in that role have been parent coordinators and helped families develop parenting plans. In Texas now, parenting plans are very, very extensive. It's not just visitation, but it's rights and duties. Who makes medical decisions? Who makes educational decisions? It's who covers the children's expenses. And in collaborative, we can do these so customized that they really are fit for these families based on what the family's schedules and the family's needs are and the children's interests are, rather than trying to fit this family into what is just standard. And very often, courts have a very short time. They can't get to know this family. The mediator can't get to know this family. And so we're trying to put a square peg into a round hole. Versus in the collaborative process, the parent coordinator will meet with the parents, talk about what their current situation in terms of time with the children, extracurricular activities, special needs of the children, get to know who the children and their relationships with their parents are, and then custom fit a parenting plan around that. The parents just love this, and it really integrates their parenting and enables them to build a parenting plan that is better for the children and better for the parents' long-term relationship.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit in the final moments we have on the show about your knowledge relative to other states. I know you practice in Texas, and obviously you can only really speak to Texas, but do you know how this is taking on in other, you talked about Minnesota. What other states do you know of that are actually actively allowing and engaging in this kind of practice?
Many, many of the other states have an ongoing collaborative practice. There, Texas was the first state in the country to have an actual statute on it, and that was in 2001, and then we have another statute as of 2011. There are a number of states that also have statutes to support, endorse, authorize collaborative practice. The Uniform Collaborative Law was something that was drafted, composed by the Uniform Committee of Laws, and that is a national organization that develops laws to try and have some uniformity between states.
So like the Uniform Commercial Code kind of thing, or is it a different?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's that sort of thought that while every state statute is not the same, they're pretty similar so that, that when people are in different states and there's a collaborative statute, they generally know what that means and what that looks like.
Is there a website or where can someone go to kind of find out if their state, if collaborative law applies, if it's being practiced in their state? Is there a...
They could go to the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals. You can just Google that. I think their website is www.collaborativepractice.com. They can Google their own state along with the word collaborative law, collaborative divorce, collaborative practice, because this is called something different in different parts of the country.
Okay, great. And we'll post that up with the show notes. One last question. What is your best piece of advice for someone who's going through divorce right now?
My best piece of advice would be to consider not the pain that you're going through right now, but who you and your spouse really are at your core and what your long-term goals would be to protect yourselves, your finances, and your family, and to work in a process where those goals and interests can be met rather than letting the emotion of the little bit of time you're in right now take over and you and your family suffer for years ahead because of that decision.
Yeah, that's powerful, right? Think long term and try to separate yourself from that pain and hurt that you're feeling in the immediate. It's hard to do, but it's well worth
it. We hear that from the divorce coaches too, right? The divorce coach community is really strong around the idea of being your best self through the divorce process. And I think we're hearing an echoing of that sentiment. It's good to hear that from yet another source.
Do you have time for a couple of anecdotes from families?
Absolutely.
Okay. I've got two in particular that really resonate with me. One was a family that the wife determined that she couldn't stay in the marriage because she was gay. And this was so painful because they both still loved each other. They had several children. And they even contemplated buying a house with two wings and carrying on their future lives with a common area. But that's impractical. And it was a difficult case. I don't want anybody to have the impression that these collaborative cases were sitting around the table and holding hands and singing Kumbaya. This is hard work with everybody doing their absolute best. And in the end, they would reach over when one of them would break down because they were sitting next to each other on that side of the table. And the one that was not breaking down would pat the other one's arm. And you see something like that and it changes you and you think this just to the bottom of my soul, I know is the way this should be done. So they ended up getting through the divorce, and she contacted me a few months later and said they figured out how to recoup their professional fees. She now has a full-time partner. He is remarried, someone that she knew and was friends with, and they had gone to the movies and had both sets of families and all their common children at the movies. And she said, we think we need to be the new Brady Bunch. And they have stayed really good friends. And the family is in good shape. The other anecdote that is very powerful to me is a family that we finished a few months back. And the wife said that the night before this last meeting, she was driving home and the kids were in the back seat. And she was on the phone with the husband. And it had gone well, but he was asking if they could go to dinner the next night so that they could show the children, even though we're divorced, we're still a family. And she said she thought to herself, and this wasn't on speakerphone, she thought to herself, I really am not in a good place to do that. But she told him, I need to go home and do wash because you're going to have the kids for spring break next week, so let me see how it goes. So she said she hung up, and her 14-year-old daughter was sitting in the back seat and had overheard enough of it to know what they were talking about. And the little girl said, Mom, we want to thank you because most of our friends whose parents have gone through a divorce either don't speak or yell at each other. And we're going to go tomorrow night to dinner as a family, and we just want to thank you for that. And you have to, the parents both teared up, but the members of the team did too, because we thought this is what it's about. This is what we're about, and that family has continued to be in good shape. And it's a very powerful role to feel like you can contribute to that kind of good.
Yeah, it's really about trying to make that the best of a bad situation and taking that higher ground and kind of like we were just talking about being your best self, right? To make that happen as best as you can.
And when you think about it, if in fact the relationships are going to end 50% in currently, and if that's going to continue, what I often tell my parents is that this is still a teaching moment for you. If you conduct yourself with dignity and compassion, you will be teaching your children how to do that if this ever happens to be one of them. And as my husband said, I said one time, I think we are helping families for a whole generation. And he said, no, you are helping families for generations.
Yeah, passing that forward, getting that composure and poise and teaching that how to act, right? When things go sideways and stuff hits the wall, it's important. It's important stuff. Well, this has been great. Where can folks find out more about your practice? You have a website? Is that the best place to get a hold of you?
Sure. It's Milner, M-I-L-N-E-R divorce-law.com.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Camille, for being on the show. And we'll put links to that collaborative law resource on the website if folks want to see if collaborative law is in their state and being practiced. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you sharing your insight on this.
Thank you, Camille. It was really, really helpful.
Thank you.
Tonight's show has been brought to you by HarmonCaldwell.com.
Harmon is a divorce attorney in Atlanta. He specializes in working with high net worth individuals. He's got over 38 years of experience. If you're going through a divorce, you should go to his website, which is at HarmonCaldwell.com. That's HarmonCaldwell.com.
Check him out. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the OverDivorce.com podcast with Adrian and Tom. The opinions expressed are theirs alone. They are not professionals. Join us next time anyway. It'll be good for you. Visit OverDivorce.com to get your free divorce recovery guide and get some fantastic resources on making a better life. Contact us via email at podcast@OverDivorce.com. Follow us on Twitter and like us on our Facebook page. We want to help you if we can.